So I chose a question downstairs and then changed my mind when I sat down. But I didn't bring the one with me that I changed my mind to. So I don't remember all of it. I apologize for the person who wrote it. But the part that I remember was asked about the conditions for concentration. I mentioned that in my talk. And in part, the talk was about the conditions that letting go of our preoccupations and developing a contented sense of well-being, tranquility, are the important conditions for concentration. But one of the ways of considering concentration is that it has a lot to do with our interest. Where does our interest go? And so, for example, if your interest on your plans for next month are more important than your interest in more interesting than what's, you know, here and now, then the mind's going to go where it's interested. So, you know, if it's interested in your fears, the mind goes there. If it's interested in your greeds, it goes there. So it goes where the interest is greatest. And if you have to have an idea of should, I should get concentrated, and it becomes a battle between what you're interested in and what you think you should be interested in, what you're supposed to, you know, then you end up a struggle. That makes it hard. And it might seem in that way that concentration is a difficult thing to, you know, some difficult state of mind. I'm very confident that all of you have the adequate capacity for concentration needed for meditation practice. I like to say that the amount of concentration you used when you took the written test for the DMV is all you need. You know, you probably were not thinking about vacation plans or your taxes, you know, when you're filling out those 33 questions, whatever it was. Or, or some of you probably get very concentrated reading a book or watching a movie or something. You have the capacity for concentration, for sure, but you have to contend with your interest, what you're interested in. And so there has to be an ability to let go of the force, the attraction, the interest to some of the things that keep us agitated or preoccupied. And so one of the important conditions for concentration involves the process of letting go of being pulled, our attention being pulled, kind of like we're pulled by our nose against our will even, into areas where are not really useful to go. We don't want to stay agitated or stay preoccupied about the future or the past. We don't find it not that interesting to be in the stories. And sometimes it takes, you know, many days in the retreat to finally be fed up with some of the fantasies and stories we have, like, you know, they can seem very important at first, but after the second day, it's like, do I really want to do this? The third day is, please stop. And we start losing interest. And then there's wise losing interest in a wise way, knowing that it's very special to come on retreat. It's not for our betterment or for our benefit to spend a lot of time thinking about the future, even no matter how wonderful the thoughts are, or whatever the fantasy might be, the thoughts might be. Here, it's for our best to really be intimate and connected to the present moment, to ourselves here, to our lived present. And so one of the ways is to begin discovering in a live way, meaningful way, how to get interested in your present moment experience. Be interested in what it's like to be alive now. What's it like to be here? And then get interested in how your mind operates. How does the mind function? What happens when the mind gets caught up in thought? What happens when the mind does this? What is it like when I bring the mind and settle on the breath for a few moments? What happens? It doesn't stay very long. What happens if I bring it back? How do I bring it back? So part of it is monitoring and being interested in what's going on here. Because this is where you're the path to really a deeper and deeper intimacy, deeper and deeper connectedness to yourself here. And to feel that connectedness and that aliveness and that three-dimensional life that can happen only here. It's two-dimensional to be in the future or the past or fantasy. To be interested in that, that's a condition that helps. And then slowly, we have to do a lot of letting go, or having some, or either let go or let go of the preoccupation with our preoccupations. And it's a slow process. You're very patient. One of the conditions for concentration is a lot of patience. It's almost be so patient that one of the conditions for concentration is not to want it. Almost, because most people, when they want something like that too much, it kind of actually doesn't help them to relax and settle down. And then slowly, settling in here and here, being content here and here, here and now, being interested in here and now, feeling a kind of holistic sense of presence, feeling whole here and now, settled. Then in that settled, holistic feeling, the mind will settle down and rest, almost like it rests in where it wants, where you put it, rests in the breath.
The question I picked, I felt had a little bit of a connection to the instructions I offered this morning about emotions. Can you please speak about the relationship between exploring our feelings and what may lie underlie them and the concept of no self? So this is a topic that could be addressed in a series of four talks. Or more. But I'll try to say some things in 5 or 6 minutes that hopefully will give a flavor or a sense of this topic. So the aspect of our life that is our feelings, it's an area, I think, where we really tend to identify. I mentioned that this morning, the tool of non-identification being really helpful in exploring our emotions. When we have emotions, we have strong emotions, we tend to congeal around them and feel like, yeah, that's me, especially familiar ones, ones that come back a lot. Yep, that's me. I'm the miserable person. I'm the one who's always miserable. So the emotions we tend to identify around. And so it's kind of hard to see the not-self nature of thought. I would use not-self rather than no-self. I don't know that I'll go into that discussion at the moment, since I have such a limited time here. But in the Buddha's discussion of the teaching of not-self, he said there's a lot of different areas of our experience, different aspects of our experience around which we identify, around which we congeal the sense of self, the feeling of self. He didn't deny that there is a feeling of self. He called this process I-making and my-making. We can say selfing. That there's an activity of mind that creates this sense or feeling of self. And he said there's a lot of different areas of our experience around which we congeal this selfing, this I-making and my-making. And one of those is the terrain of what he called mental formations, of which emotions are a subset. Mental formations are a set of activities of mind with which there is a intentional or volitional component to them. And so states like the emotional states, the feelings, and the whole complex of emotions falls under this category. And often we have a sense in our emotions that there's a lot of layers. This question refers to the things that underlie our feelings, our emotions. And often there is that sense that emotions are pretty complex, complicated things. You know, we have a sense of many layers, many threads coming together to produce a sense of a particular emotion. And the Buddha explored this, the mental formations. He used an analogy to both explore how our mental formations seem to appear solid, and how that very solidity is deceiving. And he used an analogy of, he said, a plantain tree. That mental formations are like a plantain tree. And I happen to live in the South Pacific in the Peace Corps. I lived in a island in the middle of the South Pacific, and they had banana trees there. And I got to see firsthand what banana trees are like. And they have a long leaf with a long stalk attached to each leaf, and that stalk is fairly thick. It's got a kind of almost a hard quality to the stalk that's attached to the leaf. And the way that the banana tree grows, the plantain tree grows, is that those stalks of the leaves are layered on top of each other. Many, many layers of those stalks come together. And the trunk of that banana tree can be, 6 inches around. Feels really solid. You have to take a hatchet to it, like you'd take a hatchet to a tree to cut it down. But when you cut that banana tree down and you start peeling the leaves apart, you want to try to find something in the middle, you peel the leaves, you peel the leaves, you peel the leaves, and what you're left with is a pile of leaves. There's nothing in the middle. The solidity, the sense of something solid being there is an illusion because of that layered nature of the plantain leaves. And much in a similar way, the solidity or the sense of the solidity of our emotions, I think, comes partly because they're so layered on each other. And so in our exploration of observing our feelings and seeing the many layered nature of our emotions, it's like peeling that banana leaf apart, the banana leaves apart. We see that there's a lot of stuff going on, but if we try to find what is me in this whole thing, well, is it this part? Is it this part? Is it this part? And we start to see that what we identify with is more of a complex of things than anything in particular. And if we start really exploring and looking, there's nothing in that that we can pin down and say, that's me. That's me. And so in our exploration, we begin to see the various aspects, this looking at our feelings, looking at what's happening. We begin to see the various aspects of the experience. We see the causal nature, that these experiences of emotions have a cause, that they are impermanent. That's another great thing that we see as we explore our emotions. They come and they go. Looking at myself and seeing how miserable I was, I so strongly identified with being miserable. And that belief was so strong that even when I was happy, my mind went something like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I know what really I am is miserable. So the mind was imputing a solidity to that miserableness that wasn't there. And when we bring mindfulness and actually observe and take in the impermanent nature of our feelings, there's little traction for imputing that permanence. There's little to impute that permanence with. And so, really what we're asked to do is just observe, notice our feelings, notice the complexity of those feelings, and you might check in, what is it that I'm taking to be me here? I found with certain emotions, it's kind of like what I took to be me was a kind of a particular state of familiar contraction in the body. And that came and went. It's kind of hard to say that it's me when it's not always there. So that's really just a little bit of a flavor, but more the encouragement to not so much get caught in the idea of not self, but just observe. Look at your experience. There's a teaching that the Buddha gave to somebody, a Bahiya, and he said, just look at your experience. In the scene is only the scene, and the heard is only the heard. Just notice moment for moment, moment to moment, what you are experiencing. And when, for you, you are really right there, in the moment, seeing. In the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the cognized is only the cognized. There's no you there, he said. There's no you in terms of that. There's no you there. And so it begins to reveal itself, this truth, this teaching, this understanding that, not that there is no self, but there is nothing that can be called a self, nothing that can be identified. This is it.